death, taxes. Canada plays well against the United States, doesn't get the result. Also, there's a penalty or a missed call or something. Camp Yell Dots here, virtual newsroom for this week. I had to tell Charlie not to laugh during my little intro there, and he did not, from what I could hear. We are chatting just after Canada's narrow 1-0 defeat to the United States at the She Believes Cup. We're joined by Sandra Persina of CanPL.ca and also of 660 News in Calgary. We were just talking before we hit record, and maybe this just sort of seems like a little bit of rose-colored glasses just because it came after the game, but maybe we'll start with you, Sandra. Thoughts on the game, thoughts on the performance by these players that, you know, it was 1-0, but you only had to watch, frankly, any 15 minutes of that game to see that Canada was performing exceptionally well under Bev Priestman in her first game.
Yeah, guys, I'm buzzing. And normally I wouldn't say that about a 1-0 loss, but for a couple of years, I was a little bit worried that this team was stagnant and there was nothing exciting about this team anymore. And the way that they performed tonight under Bev, I'm just so impressed, and the resiliency. And she talked all week leading into the tournament about bravery, and she wanted her players to be brave. And we saw that. And to do this without John Molinaro had a great article about, yeah, he did. Are you shaking your head? No, he had a great article.
No, I know, because I know exactly what you're going to say. And that's something, again, and that's what people ultimately aren't even talking about, who wasn't in this Canada team, right?
Exactly. And I think the current generation of fans, they don't know what this team is like without Christine Sinclair. And that's just the truth. And we saw it tonight. And this is pretty exciting. You have players that we didn't know a lot about. I knew a little bit about Vanessa Gilles. I talked to her a few years ago when she got called to her first camp, but she didn't make the cut on the team. And she told me her story, and it's really neat. I mean, she didn't start playing soccer till she was a teenager. She was a tennis player. She was a goalkeeper. And I was like, maybe I should play not in between the pipes. So just a really cool story. And to see, she took Twitter by storm. I've never really seen anything like this. It's usually other players, but congratulations to her. And that's what's really exciting, is you're seeing other players excel because they've been given this opportunity. She says, here's 90 minutes. You're playing the best team in the world. You haven't played in a year on the national stage. Your starting goalkeeper gets injured within the first 10 minutes. Go. And wow. And normally I wouldn't say this about a loss. I'd be like, here we are. Just like you said, rose-colored glasses. We're just A for effort. No, this was awesome. This is such a solid building point for a program that, frankly, I was a little bit worried about after that Women's World Cup.
Yeah, I promised myself I wouldn't yell too much about the penalty. So I won't.
Okay. Do we have to? Do you want to do it now, or you want opening thoughts?
Maybe. what I do want to say, just kind of on the back of what Sandra's just been saying. I mean, we know all of these players that weren't in camp, and I think it might hurt myself to say this. I think that if Canada had maybe a couple of those players in camp, they probably win that game. I think at the very least, if they have maybe Christine Sinclair in there to finish one of those chances, they probably win that game. And if the penalty goes their way.
Yeah. But I think what tonight will teach them, Charlie, now that you mention that, is that they need to be a little bit more selfish. I know you want to look for the pass. Don't look for the pass.
Yes.
I think of Nichelle Prince's opportunity. Gosh, do I wish she would have shot that.
Yeah. 100%.
What?
But I digress.
Before we get to the penalty, and this is something that Charlie and I were texting about during the game, and you sort of saw, I mean, I hate to point out Janine Becky because she had those two missed chances, really, even from the Prince pass. But, you know, I'm just curious to be in the mind of those players at that point, because even by the 60th minute, you know, I think you called it out on Twitter halfway through, Sandra, just being like, hey, they could, there was a chance that everything could still fall apart through that first half. First half was good, but you know, you wonder when you get to like the later stages of this game, you're like, holy crap, we can do this. I'm just wondering for the confidence level, you know what I mean? It would have been a tricky spot to be in, especially when you have those chances to put the game away. Okay, the penalty. Charlie?
That's just across the board an awful, awful decision. I don't know how the ref doesn't see that. I don't know how a lines person doesn't see that. It's one of the most blatant handballs I've seen in a while. And it would have completely changed the game. If Canada takes a lead in that game, it maybe finishes very, very differently. Now, because we are talking about Canada missing their chances, we should probably mention that, you know, I think Lindsay Horan and Megan Rapinoe would probably also be kicking themselves for a few of those. But, I mean, Steph Labbe had an unbelievable game as well. So did the crossbar. But... I digress.
But I'm with you there. Coach Bev was just on the post game and she said, yeah, it was a handball, but she countered that with, you can't always count on those opportunities. And when you want VAR, it's not there. And when you don't want VAR, it's there. It's just one of those things. And you can't rely on one call to give you the game. So I see both sides of it. Yeah. Again, it could have changed the course of the game, but here we are.
Yeah, the thing is, I just want to say, like, against a team like the U.S., you have to take those chances, right? Because you're not going to be able to weather that storm for the whole game. And, I mean, Canada nearly did. They got pretty far, but, I mean, it's you're not going to shut out the United States on their own home turf. Like, it's just not going to happen no matter how hard you try. And if you have chances like that, you have to take them.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off that. Just that, you know, we're talking about a penalty, a penalty chance in a game that, you know, Canada was really not that far off on. I think that people will sort of look back on decisions made in national team games and in the sport across the world and say, oh, if this happened, you know, this would have been different. I think, I mean, you could tell me, Sandra, we missed this call with Bev here just now after the game, but, you know, the positivity to say that, oh, yeah, no, I guess if that happened, that would have been good, but we still played really well. End of story, right? Like that, like for me, that's more of the story. It's that, yeah, sure, that could have happened, but, you know, we're still walking away from a game where Canada lost 1-0 and saying, oh, that was pretty good. you know what I mean?
Essentially, to me, if I were writing this story for print or for digital or whatever, I think that the handball, to me, it would just be a footnote. I don't think it would be one of my three talking points for this particular game. It just wouldn't be, because these mm-hmm. things happen in games all the time. They get missed, something gets called that's 50-50 or isn't egregious 50 or isn't egregious as you think it is. To me, it's just a footnote. And that's, to me, not the focal point of this game. The focal point of this game, to me, was Canada was laid off on a layoff for a year. Injuries, best players, some of the best players are still in France, couldn't come over. You got a bunch of players coming at different times. They weren't all in camp together. And this is the performance you get. And it's an exciting brand of ball. That's what this team needs.
Yeah.
And for so long, we were just, it was boring. And I hate to use that word, but at least when you watch tonight, like you guys said, screaming at the TV, I looked at Twitter. I looked at I was like, wow, people are pumped about this. I don't know if everyone was just so hungry for soccer. That's a key part of it. So I thought the handball to me is basically a moot point.
Yeah.
Okay. And that, I'm not sure what else the two of you want to talk about here, but we already sort of talked a little bit about Vanessa Gillies there. And I mean, maybe now a bit of a selection headache in terms of the center back depth there. I mean, obviously it's just one game, but maybe it's just a good omen for Canada that now you have, like, yeah, Kadisha Buchanan, Zdorsky, I thought, had a good game. Like, you know, the options are there, right, at center back.
I really like it. And the fact that you have to be a very physical player, you have to be an adaptable player, you have to be a player that's really good in the air, and you could be prone to injury. So knowing that this kind of versatility and this kind of depth is available. And if you're in a situation, say at the Olympics or another tournament where you're probably the top team in the group, and let's say you play three back, you've got three outstanding defenders if you decide not to line up four. And so can you imagine three back with those three? That's solid. So yeah. I thought that was really exciting. And just knowing that you have that option, that's great.
Yeah. See, I think something else that I did want to mention quickly, like after tonight, I think the real selection headache might actually be in midfield. Because after a game like that today, I don't think there's any way that Quinn should not be starting Olympic games.
Isn't that the truth?
They were just fantastic all night. And Canada doesn't necessarily have that kind of mobility in players. Like, for all that she's done for the game, Sophie Schmidt doesn't have that mobility or the passing range. And I think if Canada's priority is getting more out of Jessie Fleming, I think you need somebody who can cover ground like Quinn with the passing range that can get Fleming going a little bit more. And I just thought that they were unbelievable tonight.
Yeah, they were fantastic. And I think what's a key in on Quinn is you look back at their defensive responsibilities when they were a center back. And the fact that they have that versatility of playing a two-way game, I would almost compare them, and to put a CPL reference in there, but I see Nick Ledgerwood a lot. And that's who Quinn reminds me of. And in essence, if someone were to say, who do they play like? I would say Nick Ledgerwood.
Yeah, we'll talk about CPL here shortly. before we do, let's just quickly look ahead to, I mean, right up next is Argentina. They have some COVID cases in their camp. Is that correct, Sandra? Like, maybe just tee up, I guess, the rest of the She Believes Cup here for us.
Yeah, so media release coming down, what was it, early this afternoon, that four players are dealing with COVID issues. They were able to call in a goalkeeper, so essentially it's only three players, but said they weren't sure how this would affect the games going forward. So they didn't play tonight versus Brazil. Brazil got the result there. And so they're setting up to play Canada on Sunday. My understanding is it's to be determined. So we're as per the officials at the She Believes Cup. So we'll keep an eye on that. But that, just to circle in on that, actually, that was a great game, Brazil and Argentina, really good South American battle. So I think for Canada here will be the key of getting away from that physical mentality, which we saw tonight. That's always on the pitch when it's Canada-US, very, very physical. But things will turn a little bit once we play a South American side. And to see how they adapt versus a team like Argentina, you don't really know how to scout that team because you don't play them that often. So it should be really interesting to see. I think Canada will take a little bit of time to figure out how they're going to play against the Argentinians and go from there.
Yeah, I agree completely. I would also kind of like to see Canada maybe open up a little bit against Argentina, because they kind of understandably had moments where they had to sit back a little bit against the U.S. just because there's so much firepower there. So I would kind of like to see how a Priestman team approaches maybe a game where you've got opportunities to score more often.
And that's again, one all of the... Sorry, oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, one of the criticisms of Kenneth Heiner-Moeller's teams were the fact that those teams were tentative, especially versus opposition that they probably, I think, back to the World Cup. And there were times where they really should have put the foot on the gas, but rather were stepping back a little bit. And we're being reactive instead of being proactive. So this, like you said, a game versus Argentina, you set the pace. You figure things out. You dominate what third you want to play in. So, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
She Believes Cup continues this weekend on Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, Canada taking on Argentina. That's on One Soccer, as was the game tonight as we're recording it, and then Canada versus Brazil on the 24th, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific. That's also on One Soccer. Pumped for these games. Absolutely pumped after that game. Okay, let's switch to CPL. Sandra, you already sort of alluded to that. While we have you, we want to ask you quickly about Cavalry FC. Obviously, you are out in Calgary, and it's a team we haven't talked about on the pod in a couple weeks. quite a bit of turnover since we last spoke, I think, in December. Maybe just your overall thoughts on how this team is coming together from Tommy Wheeldon Jr.'s point of view. Obviously, Dom Zator departing would be a big one, but what are people saying in Calgary, about these roster moves and frankly, an unprecedented amount of turnover at a club like Cavalry? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, surprising to me. Somebody that's followed them from the beginning, they've been a side that's been very loyal to its players and players coming out of Foothills and that sort of pathway. So this, to see so many players coming internationally, I'm actually a little bit surprised at how much turnover there has been. I was joking today as we were preparing for this call that I actually had to go and look at the roster and be like, okay, who's here? Who's not here? Who's left? And it's pretty wild. It's exciting because I guess this means we're going to see a different product. Yes, we'll see a team coached by Tommy Wheeldon Jr. And you've got a couple of those core pieces left. Marco Carducci will be between the wickets, but I'm really curious to see what kind of style we'll see on the pitch, hopefully, knock on wood, come May.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking down the roster. I mean, I want to say it's younger than it was in the past, especially with some of the international players, which maybe logically lends itself better to the kind of pressing for 90 minute style that we know Tommy loves so much. Yeah. But maybe it's very strange to me because I think 2020 was a really odd year for Cavalry because I don't know if you can take that much away from the Island Games just because of how many players were missing, especially at the end there. Sandra, maybe I'll put it to you like this. Are you concerned? as simply as possible.
Concerned isn't the word that I would use. I'm curious about the chemistry because that was the bread and butter of Cavalry's success in its inaugural season and the success it not only had in league play, but in the Canadian Championship. So a lot of those pieces are removed. Yeah, you have the crux of the team left. There's still a lot of leadership and obviously the coaching is the same, but I'm curious. Yeah, curious is the word that I would use because I have a lot of trust in Tommy Wheeldon Jr. He's a very adaptable coach and I think we'll see it on the pitch, but I don't know in what form, essentially.
Adapt and overcome, as yeah. Tommy Wheeldon Jr.
That's right.
Is want to say. Before we let you go, Sandra, I got to ask you, we were asking all of our guests this question. We missed it last week, but we will continue back on it. Give us a Canadian cultural recommendation. Now, I know that we were recently posting about Kim Mitchell. I don't think you're going to pick Kim Mitchell, but could you give us something else?
Okay, yeah, no patio lanterns. So actually, it's funny you mentioned this question because in our newsroom today, we were talking about Kim's Convenience and just the cultural significance that show has. I'm a first-generation Canadian. My parents are immigrants. And that show speaks to me on so many levels, everything from the parents meddling to the drama in the church community to just everything that's involved in that show. And I just think it's such a wonderful essence of being Canadian and this cool mosaic that we're all such an awesome part of. I mean, when you come from an immigrant family, they're really involved in your life. How do I put this? And they only want the best for you. And that comes from a lot of meddling and a lot of, the church community speaks to me highly where it's a lot of, hey, have you met so-and-so? And maybe I can introduce you to my son and a lot of that. So that show, I think, is just so wonderfully written and acted and it speaks from the heart. So without getting too much kumbaya, I think it is just the perfect Canadian show. So that is my recommendation for Canadiana.
I love that. That's way more wholesome than I thought because I thought you were just going to pick patio lanterns to make fun of us. So I'm glad that you went earnest with it. And that's a show that's internationally acclaimed. Okay, Sandra, thank you so much for joining us. Again, Canada narrowly losing to the United States at the SHIBA Leafs Cup. Again, Sandra, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Quickly switching back to the CPL, just to recap, a busy week again in the league. Lots of re-signings, lots of movement. I think the biggest one would be Daniel Crutzen re-signing for Forge. Charlie, I know you talked to him there this week. Someone we mentioned, I believe, last week or a couple of weeks ago, in terms of, you know, he went out on trial, obviously in Scandinavia, and is now back in Hamilton. Maybe the question is, what did you glean from that conversation, and specifically about this Forge team? You know, really, they're just assembling back the same way that they left CONCACAF League play in Honduras. You know, as you know, you got Chris Nanko's resigned as well. You know, they're. There's no new signings. So, yeah, what did you take from that conversation?
Yeah, I think the first thing that's standing out to me, not just from talking to Daniel, but I think from talking so far to every Forge player that's re-signed, has been how badly all these guys were affected by the CONCACAF League thing and how much they want to get back to it. Because it'll be maybe the first thing that most of these guys bring up. Like, why is it so important for you to be back at Forge? And they're like, yeah, we just really want to run it back in the CONCACAF League, because they really, really were close. And they're frustrated with the way it ended. And they're pretty confident that they will go even farther in their second run at it. But for Daniel Crutzen specifically, it's probably... Then if I'm a Forge fan, that's maybe the name that's kind of calming me down the most so far, besides maybe Kyle Becker resigning. Just because, I mean, with David Egger retiring, if Forge were to lose Crutzen as well, that would probably mean a pretty extensive new look to the back line, which has been the best defense in the league, right? And that would actually be a concern, I think, for Forge. Because, I mean, Crutzen's one of, I think, three players in the league that constantly gets argued as the best defender in the league. I'm not going to say which one I think it is at the moment, but I think that was
the official headline that Forge put out. They said arguably the best defender in the league. I laughed.
Yeah. I think it. We kind of go between it being Daniel or Amir Didic or Dominic Zator. I don't know at the moment which one it is, but Crutzen definitely has the track record and the success with his team to back it up. But yeah, it's just huge for Forge to have him back. He's not a guy that they could really have afforded to lose at the moment. So it's great. I mean, it's also great to see that he's getting opportunities to go on trial in Sweden. I talked to him about it, and it sounded like it went really well over there. There were some kind of circumstances why he didn't end up signing. I'm not really sure what that means. But, I mean, for one thing, I think it's impressive that someone like Daniel Crutzen is getting these opportunities after 2 years at Forge, which before that, he was just, like, playing college soccer in Albany and kind of fell off the map a little bit. So I think it's maybe a testament to Forge and to the CPL that he got this opportunity with this team. He had a whole lot of success with it, and he's really got just an incredibly bright future.
Yeah, because why wouldn't you want to, like you mentioned CONCACAF League specifically. That's a competition that Daniel Crutzen had a lot of success in last year. You know, any of sort of those, you know, we talked a lot about the mental roadblocks that competitions like that can bring on players. It didn't seem to affect him one iota. You know, I think he was in the team of the week twice. So yeah, why not come back and run it back, like you said. And quickly before we go, you know, obviously the Canadian Championship is looming over this entire thing, specifically Forge and their date with Toronto FC. Chris Armas, the new coach of TFC, in a press conference, a media day this past week, he was asked about it, and he just said, we've got to be ready for mid-March.
Yeah.
Not to say that that's a confirmed date, of course. As we've already said, you know, nothing's confirmed. So, you know, who knows? Who knows in the age of COVID-19, right, what can happen? But, I mean, that is such a short turnaround for Forge. You know, at this point, you know, we're expecting more signings to come this week and next. you know, they've been coming quite hot and heavy with new names, so expect some more. But yeah, that is such a short turnaround if it is mid-March, because you see something like that written down. I'm not sure if you're in the same boat, Charlie, but you're like, oh yeah, that's a month away. It's a month away.
Yeah, and then I just looked down at the corner of my computer, and as we're recording, it's February 18th, which is just unbelievable. It's going very fast. But yeah, for Forge, it's weird because, I mean, I know that the CPL offseason has been really, really long, but Forge's season only really ended in mid-December, right? Mm-hmm. And that's later than TFC, by the way. So they're going to have a shorter offseason than their opponent heading into this Canadian Championship game. And by the looks of it, probably a shorter training camp as well heading into it. So it'll be really fascinating. I mean, I think we all just don't really know what to expect from this game mm-hmm. when it happens. But I think it's a really fascinating opportunity for Forge, who really, really love being the underdog in games like this. They've done it before. I think we mentioned it last week that they've gone into difficult places and they've performed well. I mean, Tauro, I mean, they beat Olympia 2 years ago. So I'm just fascinated to kind of see how they might approach this, what the squad even looks like by then, if there's any players that they won't have available or any maybe new players that might be coming down the pipeline that we don't know about. And obviously the same goes for TFC, who haven't finalized their roster either, and they've got a new coach. But I don't know. I think we're all just excited to find out if and when this game is going to happen and just be ready for it, because it's going to be pretty exciting.
And yeah, I don't think Toronto FC has any new signings in, right? Is that right?
No.
Nothing confirmed.
Not yet. No, not yet.
And neither is Forge. So no. You know what? Why don't we just, let's just lock it in. Let's just lock it in. Only remaining players, or only returning players. Let's just do it. Let's just play the game.
Please. Hopefully.
Yes, yes. Okay, hopefully we'll have more to talk about on that next week. Again, a busy week in the CPL. Lots of re-signings. If you're not already subscribed, wherever you get your podcasts, go ahead and search Canadian Premier League. We should be the first podcast to pop up there. And again, we'll have a recap of the She Believes Cup next week. And again, some more signings coming down the pipe, some big ones in the CPL. So stay tuned for that.